Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Anantam Highways Trust Q3 and FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jignesh Shah, Whole-time Director and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Nilesh Shukla, Chief Financial Officer of the Investment Manager of the Trust. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Shah.
Thank you, Nirav. Good morning, everyone. A very warm welcome and a big thank you to all the participants for joining Anantam Highways Trust first investor call. As of today, we have completed 4 months into our journey as a publicly listed InvIT, and we are incredibly excited about the opportunity to convey our vision and strategy and also discuss the quarterly results with our investors. Our listing represented the formal commencement of a long-term journey to build one of India's leading, most trusted InvIT platforms. Anantam Highways Trust is anchored by two highly complementary institutional strengths. On the one side, there is Alpha Alternatives, the sponsor, who brings best-in-class investment management capabilities, robust institutional governance frameworks, and deep financial expertise across cash flow management, yield optimization, leverage management, and distribution planning. Complementing this strength is Dilip Buildcon Limited, who contributes strong operational and execution capabilities, deep domain expertise in road asset development and operations and maintenance, and a proven pan-India track record in delivering and maintaining high-quality highway infrastructure. We commenced operations with a portfolio of 7 high-quality hybrid annuity model assets, as they are called HAM assets, with an average residual concession life of over 13 years and no traffic risk. HAM assets are government-backed annuity-based assets that generate predictable cash flows, translating into steady and sustainable distributions for our unit holders. Our platform is structured around delivering strong overall total return to our investors with prudent leverage and conservative assumptions. But Anantam is just not about stability. It is also about scalable, disciplined growth. Through a robust right of first offer arrangement that we have with Dilip Buildcon and Alpha Alternatives, we have strong visibility on a high-quality growth pipeline. Our ambition is to scale our assets under management to around 25,000 crores by 2029, which implies a near 5x growth plan over the next 3 years. And importantly, this growth plan is based on a clear thought process that this has to be value accretive to our investors and generate total high-quality risk-adjusted returns for unit holders. As we move forward, our mission is clearly defined around a few core pillars. First pillar that basically will drive our vision going forward is scalable AUM growth. We aim to build one of the largest and most respected road InvITs in India. Growth will be pursued through accretive acquisitions, both under our ROFO pipeline and selectively from third parties, while always ensuring both DPU and NAV accretion. Second, transparency and institutional governance. So we are committed to the highest standards of disclosure, broad oversight, and regulatory compliance. Governance is not a formality for us. It is a foundation to long-term capital stewardship. Third pillar that we will be following is the consistency and longevity of distributions. Our objective is to provide predictable, sustainable, and growing distributions backed by stable cash flows. We want to ensure that the distributions basically are not volatile but provide longevity so as to generate a consistent cash flow stream for our investors. Lastly, we will maintain an optimal capital structure, use leverage judiciously, and pursue only those opportunities that enhance risk-adjusted returns for our unit holders. Our focus will always be on maximizing total return through a combination of steady distributions combined with NAV growth through accretive acquisitions. Anantam is designed for longevity, not short-term exits. We are building an institutional-grade platform that reflects balance, stability with growth, yield with governance, and scale with discipline. As InvITs continue to reshape infrastructure investing in India, we believe Anantam Highways is positioned to lead with transparency, scale, sustainability, and performance. We are deeply grateful for the trust our investors have placed in us, and we look forward to delivering on our commitments consistently and responsibly over the years ahead. In our recent board meeting, we have announced our first quarterly distribution of rupees 2.50 per unit. Thank you once again for joining us today. I will now hand over the call to Nilesh, who will walk you through the financial performance and the key financial metrics, following which we will open the floor for questions.
Thank you, Jignesh. Thank you, Nirav. Good morning, everyone, and thanking you for joining us today. I will briefly walk you through the key financial highlights for the quarter. In Q3 2026, Anantam Highways Trust delivered a strong and stable operating performance following the acquisition of SPVs on 10th October 2025. This marks the first period of meaningful consolidation and clear visibility of cash flow across the platform. On consolidated basis, the total revenue for the quarter stood at 123.8 crore, while total expenses were 18.2 crore. This translated into the robust EBITDA of 105.6 crore, which reflects the inherent strength and stability of our annuity-based HAM portfolio. Finance cost and depreciation for the quarter were 51 crore, resulting in a profit before tax of 54.6 crore. At the standalone trust level, revenue stood at 84 crore with total expenses of 2.5 crore. This resulted in the EBITDA of 81.6 crore after accounting for finance cost of 36.5 crore. Profit before tax is at 45.1 crore. Moving to some key operating and balance sheet highlights, the NDCF at a SPV level was approximately 248.5 crore, indicating strong and stable underlying cash generation. During the quarter, we declared a distribution of 54.4 crores, translating to rupees 2.5 per unit, which also represents the trust NDCF. The debt to EV ratio is 42.11%, which is well within the regulatory norms and provides flexibility for future acquisitions. We continue to maintain AAA stable credit rating, which underscores the strength, quality, and predictability of the trust cash flows. Overall, the quarter demonstrates a strong operating performance, healthy cash flow generation, providing comfortable coverage of debt servicing requirement. With this, we will now open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask the question. The first question is from the line of Nilesh Doshi from Prospero Tree. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Am I audible, sir?
Yes, yes, you are.
Thank you, thank you. Sir, the residual life of the all HAM project, average residual life is mentioned 13 years. And if we maintain the 2 rupees 50 paisa per quarter, the distribution, it comes to 10 rupees per the year. Suppose no further asset is added, then I think we may not get the our capital back also, because the 100 rupees was the issue price. So how the distribution going forward? And first, please explain my point. Am I right or wrong, sir?
So, I mean, the first quarter distribution basically is just the beginning of this journey. As I mentioned, you know, in my opening statement, our endeavor is to basically ensure both consistent and increasing distributions for our investors, combined with providing you NAV growth through accretive acquisitions. So the first quarter distribution doesn't necessarily kind of, you know, transform into the same distribution over the life. I mean, you know, as I've also highlighted that, you know, we already have a very strong ROFO pipeline. If you would have seen the offer document, you know, we have identified ROFO assets which we are looking to bring into the InvIT in the coming months, which will basically add to the overall cash flows. And once that happens, I mean, you will see, you know, growing distributions, you know, as we move ahead in the InvIT journey. I hope I answered your question.
Sir, partly. But once you mentioned in your opening remark that there was a predictable, sustainable and longevity about the distribution. So can you give the broad guidelines for the FY 2027-28 distribution?
So, you know, as of right now, we are not in a position to give distribution guidance. What I can tell you is that you know, we will basically stick with our stated objective of, you know, ensuring consistency in distribution along with growing distribution, while being mindful that we also need to, you know, drive accretive growth, NAV growth for our unit holders, so as to target an overall total return for investors.
Okay. And sir, we have all 7 HAM projects. So what is the spread? Because we have the 42% is the debt to equity ratio, 42% is the debt to AUM. So what is the spread between the rate of interest we are paying at the average cost of our borrowing and the annuity rate?
Sure. So the average cost of borrowing is currently at 7.5%, and our portfolio consists of projects, some of which are linked to bank rate, some of which are linked to MCLR. And for bank rate projects, the spread is 3% over the bank rate. And for MCLR, basically it's 1.25% over the MCLR. So there is sufficient room between, you know, what we are earning, what we are paying to the bank. And, you know, that is just one component of cash flows. There's also basically, you know, the return of principal which you get, which you use, because BCC is much higher than the debt. So we, you know, we are very comfortable basically with the overall cash flow situation and forecast for the investors going forward.
And sir, what is the composition of the debt in terms of the fixed rate of debt and floating rate?
Entire debt is floating rate. Nothing is fixed rate.
And sir, what is the
bank debt?
Okay, so we are our annuity is also linked with the MCLR as well as the bank rate. So it is better that we maintain the floating rate debt. That's good. So what is the debt repayment schedule?
So the debt repayment schedule basically, I mean, is spread over the, you know, the balance life of the assets, leaving a short tail, and the repayment schedule has been dotted to the, you know, the manner in which the annuities are received, so as to always ensure a very, very healthy DSCR going forward. You know, we as you would, you know, understand, the effort always is to maintain a balance, you know, ensure sufficient distribution for unit holders while maintaining, you know, the AAA rating, maintaining healthy DSCRs. So we have ensured all of that in designing the repayment schedule.
Sir, is it like that in the initial year there will be a lower amount of the debt repayment and after 2, 3 or 4 years there will be a higher debt repayment? It is like that or equal over a period of time?
It is a moderately rising repayment schedule over a period of time while also ensuring that in the years the major maintenance activity is undertaken, you know, there would be a slight reduction in the repayment schedule so as to again ensure that the cash flows are aligned with the inflows.
So when there will be higher debt repayment, is it possible the NDCF will reduce?
So as I said, I mean, the repayment schedule has been aligned to the inflows. Obviously, when there's a higher repayment, the NDCF will reduce.
Okay, and sir, our NAV is rupees 120. So what discount rate do you have applied, sir, to calculate the 120 rupees?
So the valuation report, the last valuation report for the InvIT was done as of June 25. That is available on our website. You know, the NAV of 120 is our management estimate as of December, because our next valuation report is due as on March 26. June 25, the NAV was around 114. And I, you know, the composition of, you know, both the cost of equity as well as the cost of debt is being highlighted in the valuation report.
But anything, can you mention the discount rate?
I think the cost of equity which was taken in the valuation report, basically for the June valuation report, was around 10.4%.
Okay. And sir, will you go for the any BOT project or will you maintain the HAM portfolio only?
So we basically, you know, are not fixated only on HAM projects. We have begun our journey with HAM projects. Our current ROFO pipeline, which is there, is primarily HAM projects. But we are open to pursuing BOT projects, TOT projects. Our requirement is that, you know, the projects, whatever we acquire, need to be, you know, providing sufficient risk-adjusted return for investors, need to be accretive in nature. And if the acquisitions meet those objectives, then we are very, very open to doing BOT and TOT as well.
Okay, and sir, my last question. The 42% is the debt. So is there any cap to maintain the 50% or there is a no cap for the InvIT?
No, there is a cap. So the cap basically is up to 49% for the first six distributions. If you maintain your AAA rating post the six distributions, then under the regulations, you can in fact expand the leverage to 70%. As I mentioned in my opening statement, we are going to be conservative in our approach. We will basically optimize the capital structure. We understand that a higher leverage, you know, can you know, lead to increase in returns. But, you know, I mean, we also need to balance the risks that emanate out of it. So we will be prudent in our leverage while ensuring that the capital structure does justice to the unit holder returns.
Okay. Thank you. All the best, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and one to ask the question. Next question is from the line of Sarvesh Gupta from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for giving the opportunity. So first, on the DPU, so this, you have been listed for 2.5 months for the last quarter. So should we consider this as 3 rupees for a normal quarter from quarter four onwards?
Thank you, Sarvesh, for joining the call. As I mentioned, we are not giving any guidance. I would only basically urge the unit holders to, look at, what we have kind of highlighted as our core pillars. You know, we basically are targeting to maintain consistent increasing distributions for our unit holders, while also ensuring that we are providing NAV growth through accretive acquisitions.
Okay. And sir, what is the approx YTM for, assuming there is no further acquisitions, what is the YTM at your IPO price?
At the IPO price, IPO price would be around 11.3%.
Okay, at 100 rupees it is 11.3%, right?
Right.
Okay. Okay. And one more question, sir, was, see, normally what we have seen is that the developers themselves have formed their InvITs, because then they gain through, a ownership of their assets partially, and distributions from it, as well as the investment manager fees, apart from the operations fees. So one thing I could not understand that what is there for Dilip Buildcon to tie up with you guys, because then they lose out on so many things and get only operational fees, which is a small fees. And why should they restrict themselves to not sell to the other third parties and other InvITs? So I could not understand how it is beneficial for Dilip Buildcon as such.
Okay. I think that's a question for Dilip Buildcon, but I'll try and answer this question. I mentioned that, our InvIT business model is very, very different than the other InvIT models in the market. So, if you look at the, the road InvIT space, you have developer sponsored InvITs, developer run InvITs, and then you have financial sponsored InvITs. Ours is the only InvIT where the InvIT is being managed by a professional investment management entity, while O&M is being done by the best-in-class, best-in-class company in the operations and maintenance space. Now, our view in NICE is pretty simple that, InvIT basically is a combination of asset management and operations. And we believe that asset management is best left to independent asset managers. When you combine a construct of, introducing potential conflicts into your InvIT, which can emanate from, both the sides being managed by the same entity, we believe that it introduces conflicts. And it doesn't bring your complementary or your core strengths to the platform. InvITs will require scaling up. And as an independent outfit, we believe that we are much better positioned to pursue acquisitions. Dilip Buildcon, what is in it for them? In fact, Dilip Buildcon, we believe, was visionary in their approach. Why sell it to a third party and lose the potential value accretion which can result from having your core InvIT play? By partnering with us, not only did they basically manage to, extract the maximum value for the stake that they retained in their assets, they also got a platform where any outside acquisitions that they pursue, that we pursue at the InvIT, would be accretive for them. And lastly, this platform then also enables them to directly access the public market, through the ROFO arrangement for any potential road projects that they will in the future. So I think it's a win-win for them, for us. And we believe, again, as I mentioned, through this bringing complementary strengths to the table, Our differentiated business model basically offers you know, something which is very unique and not present in the Indian marketplace.
Okay. And you have ROFO for all of Delhi Buildcon's operational assets. Is that true? For all HAM as well?
Yes, that's true. It's a ROFO for 5 years.
For the next 5 years? And beyond that, then they can sell to third parties also.
Beyond that, I mean, you know, while technically they can sell it to third parties, I mean, you know, we are both aligned in our partnership to, you know, to scale up this InvIT and to make it one of the leading InvITs in the country.
Okay. What is their stake in the InvIT?
They are currently at around 43% unit holding in the InvIT.
Okay. Okay. And sir, this, so on the NAV, so one was this assumptions, you know, of maybe future assets which have come after June quarter. Are there any growth assumptions that have changed from June 25 to now in individual cash flows from individual SPVs? Or we have
I'm sorry, Sarvesh, I mean, your question was not audible. Would you mind basically asking the question again?
Yeah, so you have done this valuation in June 25, and the NAV was 114 rupees, and now you have estimated it to be 120 rupees. So this 6 rupees movement has come because of what primarily? You can throw some light on that.
So, I mean, so two things basically. You know, what has happened is that in this quarter, we have prepaid some debt to maintain an optimal capital structure and to also bring flexibility for the future acquisitions that we have in the pipeline. So that is one thing which has happened. And you know, I mean, given the time lapsing, this has kind of, you know, resulted in an increase in the NAV. Dinesh, you would like to add anything to this?
Yeah, so effectively, so there's a 6 months gap. So obviously there's an unwinding of value during the 6 months period. And as Jignesh mentioned, so basically debt capital ratio, debt equity ratio has also completely gone down because of prepayment of certain portion of the debt. So primarily these are the components which is actually contributing to increase of rupees 6 in terms of NAV.
Okay. And so if you look at some of the listed,
we are losing your audio in between. Can you come in a better reception area, please?
Yeah, is it better now?
Yeah, it is better.
Yeah, so look at some listed peers. You know, the kind of distribution per unit that they are doing is approximately 10-11% of the NAV. Now, in your case, at least if we analyze this one, it is coming to be lower than that figure. So what explains this sort of a disparity between, because most listed players are at 10-11% of NAV is what they are maybe distributing as of now or around that number?
Sarvesh, I mean, I think, you know, it's too early in the journey to compare us to players who've been around 3-4 years in their journey. As I mentioned, you know, this is the first quarter. We have defined our stated objectives, and we would basically urge you know, investors you know, basically to think about us on a total return basis. That is basically what is guiding us in our you know, growth journey going forward. I wouldn't want to basically link the first quarter distribution to drawing conclusions.
Hello.
Sorry,
Go ahead,
Hello.
Arvind.
Was I not audible?
No, understood, sir. So maybe I think in the coming quarter or so, maybe after March results, we'll get to get a better handle of your distribution per unit. So we'll wait for that. And finally, on your AUM increase target, which is, I think you mentioned 25,000 crore by FY29. Did I hear it right?
Yes.
So that now, given that we are already at 42% debt to AUM, so that means most of this would be driven by incremental equity raising because I think for the first 6-7 distributions, we cannot go beyond 49%, and we are already there. So is that the understanding right, that you will have to keep raising equity unit capital also every time you want to acquire assets going forward?
So, way I would basically ask you to think about it is that there are a few ways in which the acquisitions can be pursued. One is obviously what you mentioned, raising unit capital to pursue the growth. And obviously, I mean, if we are at 42%, then till the time there is room that gets created, and again, we don't want to kind of go to the regulatory maximum. So there is a range in which we would want to operate. So one option always is basically to raise unit capital. We also basically will be both Dilip Buildcon and Alpha Alternatives are going to also pursue sale of the ROFO assets to the InvIT through swapping of InvIT units. We don't necessarily need to raise capital. It will lead to an expansion of the unit holding of the sponsor and Dilip Buildcon in the InvIT. That's the second way in which we will bring in assets into the InvIT. And then the third basically option will be that, at some point in time, we will have completed six distributions. So depending on the capital structure at that point in time, pursuing acquisitions through leverage will also be an option.
Okay. And what will be the guidance for asset acquisition in this Q4 and FY27?
So, what I can guide to that on the asset acquisition is that as of right now, we have visibility of doubling the InvIT size by second quarter FY27.
By H1 of FY27.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And your cost of debt is also higher than some of the other InvITs. So is there any plan around that, and what explains the difference? Where are you sort of, how are you guys thinking about that? Is it also driven by your higher leverage as of now?
No, I don't think so. The cost of debt is linked to the higher leverage. I think our cost of debt basically, yes, if I look at the entire industry, there are a couple of players who are at a lower cost of debt than we are. We are broadly in line with most of the industry players. As I mentioned, we are also, I would say, in our early phase of our journey. So as we go along, we do intend to pursue a combination of bond market, debt raise, bringing the cost of debt down on bank debt as well. So you will see all of those measures being implemented in the coming quarters.
Okay, sir. So thank you, and all the best for patience, and thank you for answering all the questions. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Devam from Ardeko Asset. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, sir, for taking my question, and congratulations on all that you have achieved in this platform over the past couple of years to bring it to this level. Firstly, I had a few questions. Wanted to understand first on the current NDCF bridge that we have shown in the presentation. Is it appropriate to consider that the operating cash flow of 300 odd crores does not have any one-offs, and this should translate to around 1,250 crore operating cash flow for the full year on these assets?
See, I mean, you need to understand that, you know, I mean, you receive annuities only twice a year.
Correct.
You know, it's not a one-for-one correlation that 300 crores becomes 1,200 crores. If you look at the presentation, we have, we've given a sheet on the seven projects. You know, some projects get annuities in certain quarters, and then the other projects get in the other quarters. It is, again, basically not, it's not a one-for-one 300 translating into 1,200 crores.
Fair enough. It would be like closer. The revenue yield would be closer to like 15%-16% on the 4,500 crore AUM for the full year.
Revenue yield, 15%. Just one minute. I think it should be on the AUM 4,500 crores, maybe closer to maybe 18%. Just give me a minute.
Okay.
Dinesh, can you just. Yeah, revenue-wise around 18%.
Given that, let's say the limited weighted average expected life of HAM is lower than, let's say, things like transmission, solar, toll roads and all those things.
Right.
Obviously, so in that case, HAM does have a rising DPU trajectory because the payouts also increase. Even if you match the debt, you should have a generally the revenue, the payouts will tend to rise over a period of time, because of on the individual asset cash flow, mainly because the there is a shorter life of expiry.
Yes. You're correct. You know, I mean, only caveat I would basically like to bring to this is that, you know, I mean, this is assuming a static portfolio.
Correct.
I mean, we keep on overlaying assets on top of the existing assets, and then, you know, keep on basically adding accretive acquisitions. Then, I mean, to the extent part of the NDCF is used for accretive acquisitions, which leads to NAV growth for investors, eventually what you are saying will pan out.
Fair enough. Basically, another way of just asking the same thing is that, all the acquisitions that we would be doing would be DPU and NAV accretive or at worst neutral. That is the right understanding, right?
All the acquisitions will be DPU and NAV accretive. Absolutely.
If you have to just give me a range of the current IRRs of the current asset block and how would those IRRs range, would 12-14 be a good number to keep in mind, or 10-12 be a good number to keep in mind?
10%-12% for what? I mean.
10%-12% the IRR, the IRR of the entire capital that is invested in this. You can tell me on the equity IRR, that is the InvIT IRR basis, not on the entire EV of the InvIT, but just on the equity of the InvIT that is being deployed into these assets, current four and incrementally also. I'm sure it will be in a similar band, current four and the incremental that we'll be planning. What would that equity IRR come to roughly?
I mean, you know, static portfolio basically, in the 10%-12% level, but as our objective is that over a medium term, I mean, you know, basically generate, you know, a 12%-14%, or maybe even a higher return for investors through a combination of distributions, combined with DPU and NAV accretive acquisitions.
Yeah, 100%. So just that is absolutely fair. So for that, because it's a shorter period, the yields might actually shoot up to much higher levels in the interim. And as you keep adding more assets, there will obviously be return of new capital which will keep getting deployed. But basically, the yields on the core will keep on rising till a certain point, till they obviously they reach the end, and then you will be keeping on being replenished. So the IRR of whatever is being added will be 10 to 12%, and the yields of that as the time passes would only increase, actually go towards a much higher number. And also, if you can, I mean, if you can just give any guidance on how, what is the asset drawdown guidance we are having for FY27. You mentioned that you are looking to double AUM by H1. And I understand that I think after FY27, you will basically be able to lever. But till then, there might be basically a swap that you will look to double the AUM. So what is the guidance you are having for FY27? And then incremental, obviously, once the flexibility of leverage will come in, it would pace up more.
So as I mentioned, currently we have visibility of doubling the inventory AUM by H1 FY27. I also basically, you know, had mentioned earlier that our target is to almost increase the AUM by around 5 times by FY29. So, you know, I mean, obviously that the period between H1 27 and FY29 is where we need to implement the acquisition, you know, into the input. We have the benefit of ROFO assets of DBL. In the first lot, you know, 7 assets came. You know, I mean, the details on the ROFO where there is the offer document, but as a reminder, there were 11 identified assets of DBL which are in the ROFO. There are 4 identified assets which Alpha Alternatives has, which will also, you know, will be offered to the InvIT. And the team continues to pursue, you know, multiple different acquisition opportunities. So we feel pretty confident in the FY29 target.
Also, just on the NDCF bridge, this quarter the debt servicing component is unduly high, maybe because of the prepayment. So what would be a general normal steady state plan that we would be having with regards to the debt servicing component and the operating cash flow? I mean, how would those ratios work on a normal quarter basis, on a static basis?
The debt servicing basically, so I mean, obviously, the total debt is around 2100 crores. I mean, the cost of debt is given. So there would be interest servicing, regular repayments, which basically are there, are around 125 to 150 crores per annum.
Okay.
Now, we basically, you know, we will maintain the balance. We do not want to have volatile distributions. We want to ensure consistency and growth in distribution. So we will adopt the combination of meeting the distribution philosophy while ensuring that there is sufficient flexibility that is available in the capital structure to be able to be ready to pursue leverage acquisitions as we move ahead in this journey.
Correct. And when we talk of any acquisition being DPU and NAV accretive, is there any... When the debt will come in, how will we look at it? Because NAV, will there be a difference between NAV and AUM because of debt coming in? And then because of that, should we say that the accretion to NAV or DPU will be relatively lower once leverage will come in compared to without leverage acquisition?
Why would it be lower?
So mainly because debt initially will be, when debt will be coming in, debt will also accrue a cost. So while there will be an overall accretion, the percentage of accretion might be a little lower. Is that the right understanding or?
I think it'll be the other way around. I mean, you know, you can avail debt at a significantly lower cost.
Okay.
And because, you know, there are, you know, lots of other optimization possibilities in the context of the InvIT. In fact, pursuing acquisition through leverage would be highly accretive for the investors.
Okay. Sure. I'll just take the math on that offline. And just finally, the main risk, in my opinion, lies also in the tracking the maintenance expenses that will be incurred in this in the asset. How do we propose to do that, and what sort of structures we have thought across around that, and what rules of thumb are we looking on the maintenance front?
Sure. So, I mean, you know, this is where the differentiated business model that we put together, you know, positions us, you know, in a very, very competitive and superior position. So first of all, you know, Dilip Buildcon basically is undertaking the maintenance. These are all
Correct.
Fixed price O&M contracts for the duration of the InvIT. So these are not, I mean, you know, there is, the amounts are frozen. And, you know, I mean, so we need to remove volatility out of the cash flows. We basically have clear visibility on what the amounts are. So that is what we have done from a risk mitigation perspective. You know, we have frozen the amounts, right? So fixed price contracts are much better than contracts which are floating in nature. Secondly, I mean, there is also complete alignment of interest. I mean, you know, Dilip Buildcon also is a large unitholder. And, you know, we are building this platform together. So even from that perspective, there's an alignment of interest in terms of ensuring the O&M activity, you know, sustains and, you know, performs very well so as to, you know, keep quality assets for the entire duration of the concession agreement. The other thing which I would like to say is that, you know, Dilip Buildcon is a, you know, is an exceptional player as far as, you know, all the sectors are concerned, but, you know, taking road, because we're talking about roads, their track record in, you know, in collection of annuities over the last several years is phenomenal. So, you know, we feel that, you know, the fact that they are undertaking the O&M, they are, you know, excellent in that regard, and the fact that, you know, their track record is exceptional. There is complete alignment of interests. Basically, we are very, very comfortable as far as the maintenance activity of our assets is concerned.
Correct. All right, sure. I appreciate that. Thanks. That's it from my side.
Okay.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Anant Mundra from iTemple Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity. So, on the investment manager fee and the project manager's fee, I mean, it appears to be slightly higher than what our peers charge. So, any reason why it is slightly higher in our case?
I mean, we believe we are pretty much competitive with the marketplace. I don't think so. We are higher than what the peers charge. And I think, you know, what is important, Anant, essentially is to kind of, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we are, the objective is to generate and maximize total return for the investors. So, if you want to achieve that and you want to have the best-in-class team, you know, growing the InvIT and, you know, translating into superior returns for the investors, then a small slight differential, even if it's there, I mean, should be fine with the investors.
Got it. No, so where I was coming was that we disclose our NAV to be about 120, and if I see all our peers are typically trading around their NAV valuation, we are at a significant discount to where our NAV is. And the only reason that could explain that probably I thought was that probably that there are some more expenses at the InvIT level, and hence the returns to unitholders are getting slightly diluted there. So just wanted to understand from that perspective.
No, mean, so I think the difference between the market price and the NIM, I mean, is, in our opinion, that's a buying opportunity for the investors. But I don't think so. The IM fee and PM fee, basically, you know, a small, even if there's a small difference, would result in such a heavy difference between the market price and the NAV. We are confident that as investors basically see our performance in the coming quarters, and you know, they basically see the differentiated approach that we are following in the InvIT, the InvIT price should migrate closer to the NAV in the coming quarters.
Got it, sir. And so can this be taken as a benchmark? So our NAV is about 120, whereas our IPO was at about 100. So can we take this as a benchmark for future acquisition, that there'll be about 20% or whatever that number is, about 16% discount to NAV is what is the acquisition price that we'll be looking at for future assets?
I mean, I wouldn't want to give a generic benchmark. I mean, sometimes acquisitions, each acquisition is different. If we are able to bring a transformative acquisition which basically changes the entire character of the InvIT, then setting and keeping benchmarks that it has to be at an X percentage discount to the NAV and all, won't lead to achieving the stated objectives. So I wouldn't want to basically zero down on whether it's 16%, 20%. I mean, obviously, if we pursue acquisitions which are lower than the NAV, then they are, accretive to the investors. And, we will be pursuing accretive acquisitions for the investors.
Got it, sir. So you also mentioned that, I think, to one of the earlier participants, that the IRR is about 11.3%. Did I hear that correct? It's about 11.3% for someone who entered at the IPO price.
Right.
If we don't add. So you were talking. So is this just pre-tax or post-tax?
This is basically pre-tax.
Pre-tax.
I mean, okay. So PV cash flows are obviously post-tax, but then, part of the income streams in the hands of the investor will get taxed. Depending on whether the investors choose to take the returns in the form of capital gains or primarily through distributions.
Got it, sir. And also, one of the earlier participants asked that our cost of debt is slightly higher. So if I look at the other two HAM InvITs that are listed, like there's Indus Infra and Capital InvIT, for them, I think for Indus it's about 6.85 right now, and Capital InvIT, the incremental borrowing has been about 6.85, whereas we are at 7.5, so the spread is quite high. So is there a scope to get this down?
Absolutely, we are, as I mentioned, in the coming quarters, you will see us basically trending this debt cost down. You also mentioned that it's incremental borrowing. This is our first quarter in our journey. So as we scale up, you will see the efforts being made, to introduce a different composition of borrowing into the mix, obviously with the objective of bringing the overall cost of debt down.
And so this debt of 7.5% is linked to repo or MCLR?
It is linked to T-bill.
It is linked to T-bill. And the annuity that we, the interest on annuity that we get, that is linked to MCLR or bank rate?
It's a combination. There are a few assets which are MCLR and few assets which are linked to bank rate.
Okay, got it. And so just to understand this calculation for NAV better that you disclosed of 120, so if I take the AUM is about 4500 crores and our debt is around 2157 crores. So if I just subtract that,
Okay.
So what's the cash, if you could help with that figure?
I think the net debt is around a little over 2000 crores.
Okay. All right. Got it. And so we have about 15 ROFO, identified ROFO assets. When you say that you plan to go to 25,000 crores from the 5,000 currently, how much would the contribution from these identified 15 assets be?
I mean, I can you know give you guidance for only for FY27. As I mentioned, H1 basically we'll be doubling the size of the invest. And other than that, basically, you know, I've already given guidance that you know we are targeting to you know take our AUM to around 25,000 crores by FY29. So that's the guidance we can give at this stage.
So I just wanted to basically understand, so the incremental 20,000 crore, how much would be from the non-ROFO assets? Because the ROFO one would is like a low-hanging fruit for us, which we will do, but the non-ROFO where third-party asset acquisition would be required, just want to understand, what's the size of that acquisition that you're thinking of?
Sure. Okay, so the ROFO assets basically should, the ROFO assets that we have right now, should translate into roughly an AUM of around between 11 and 13,000 crores. I mean, you know, we will need to work the exact numbers, but I'm just giving a broad guidance. And the balance basically is what we will need to pursue acquisitions, which I also mentioned. I mean, you know, basically we are, you know, I mean, the team is at it in terms of pursuing acquisitions.
Understood, sir. Also, I think Alpha Alternatives and Dilip Buildcon, I think Dilip Buildcon also has some association with some other InVit, Shrem, and I think Alpha Alternatives are also running some other funds. So, at the promoter level, because there are multiple funds available, how do they take a call on which asset to be deployed to which of their fund or to which InVit?
So, you know, trust me, you know, I mean, basically, we have, you know, appropriate guardrails to ensure that there is no conflict of interest. I mean, we are very clear that whatever falls in the ambit of the InVit, you know, we have a publicly listed InVit. So, publicly listed InVits have basically, you know, defined criteria on the kind of assets which can come into the InVit. So, if the acquisition opportunities basically which fall in the ambit of public InVit comes about, then you know you can be rest assured that the InVit will be the vehicle where the acquisition will be pursued first. So we are very very mindful that you know conflict of interest basically you know need to be you know appropriately handled, and you know we do have sufficient you know action steps in place to ensure that we basically you know manage it appropriately.
Got it. And sir, are Dilip Buildcon and Alpha Alternatives a related party? So just to understand this better. So then if any asset is coming from the Alpha Alternative side, will Dilip Buildcon be able to vote on those assets?
Absolutely. If any asset is coming from our side, I mean, Dilip Buildcon is not related to us. So they will be able to vote on assets that that we offer to the InVit, and the public investors will be able to vote. Dilip Buildcon is classified as a public investor.
So the vice versa is also true. Dilip Buildcon's
vice versa will not apply, because in the Dilip Buildcon assets, some of the assets we have a minority stake. You know, like the seven assets which went into the InVit in the first round, the you know the stake composition was 54% with Dilip Buildcon, 46% with Alpha Alternatives. In some of the assets, in some assets it was 74% and 26%. So, you know, different assets, there is different minority shareholding of Alpha Alternatives. So, in the assets that Dilip Buildcon has, in those assets, basically, you know, the voting pattern would be different.
Yeah, okay. All right. And sir, why has the tax rate for us been higher this quarter?
Sorry?
The tax rate seems quite high for us at the console level. Any reason?
Good.
So actually, if you see the tax, basically we are in the old regime. So effectively, there is some impact in the deferred tax. Okay. Again, we have recently got the budget. We are in process of evaluating few things. So we'll analyze and finalize our tax positions maybe in the March quarter. So effectively, so if you see a current number, so being in five of our SPVs are in the old regime, so that's the reason it's a MAT liability which is coming for these five assets. Okay, that's forming my basic tax liability, and deferred tax is because there are certain positions which we have taken, so it's a one-time deferred tax asset, deferred tax expense which is created in profit and loss account. Okay, which is not expected to be a very recurring one. But in case if we take up certain positions, so there may be a chances of reversal also subsequently.
I think you know, I mean, I would urge you to basically you know, wait for the fourth quarter you know, to form a view on this. This is the third quarter. We are still deliberating on our strategy in light of the budget, and things will get clearer in the fourth quarter.
Okay, got it. And sir, one final question. In the NDCF which that you've given, there are certain reserves that we've created. This could be Dasra reserves or MMR reserves. So I'm assuming if it's a Dasra reserve or an MMR, I mean, these are primarily one time, or they're gonna recur?
So the reserves that we have created basically essentially is for primarily couple of things. One, basically it's for tax. So depending on the strategy that we decide to pursue, either this will result in payment, or this will get you know, unwounded. There is also a reserve which has been created for certain claim which has been received on fly ash pertaining to the construction period, which is a pass-through item to the EPC contractor Dilip Buildcon. So because this came in the December quarter, you know, that has to be set aside because that is not actually NDCF of the unit holders.
Okay. So this kind of an indemnification is available across all the SPVs for all nature of claims that might arise in future. Is that
so
correct?
Whatever basically where the claims raised by the contractor during the construction period basically, and you know, if these come about, you know, the cash flows, then essentially there is a pass-through mechanism which has been agreed with the contractor.
Okay.
And these have not been taken into consideration in the projections as far as the unit holders are concerned.
Okay. That's it from mine. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next follow-up question is from the line of Nilesh Doshi from Prospero Tree. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the another time opportunity. Sir, any InvIT or REIT, the distribution is the composition of interest, capital repayment, other income and dividend. And the investor likes the exempted or tax-free distribution. In this distribution, in which Anantam has not declared any dividend, and five of the assets, just mentioned that the five of the assets are under all tax regime. So I think the dividend, the part that the distribution received from that SPV is tax-free in the hands of the investor. Is it my correct understanding, or will you maintain the only composition of interest and capital repayment?
So, you know, I mean, distributions basically will vary on a quarter-on-quarter basis, the composition of distribution, you know, I mean, right way of saying it. You know, dividends basically can only be declared if, you know, there is income available after adjusting for accumulated losses, right? So, in this quarter, basically, the possibility of dividend was not there. That's why we basically have given out distribution through a combination of interest and capital repayment. But, you know, this will be varying on a quarter-on-quarter basis.
Sir, composition may change, but the tax-free component, suppose the any dividend received from the SPV to the trust and trust to the investors, unit holder, will it be the exempted or will it be taxable?
So if the SPVs are following the old regime, then you are correct that the dividend declared by the trust will be tax exempt. Even the capital return basically is is exempt in the hands of the unit holder. So to that extent there is parity between tax-free dividend and the return of capital.
So this quarter there is a no dividend because there was a carry forward loss and it was not completely set off. And the once that will be set off, then the receipt may comes in the form of dividend also. And if this is from the that five SPV, then it will be exempted in the hands of the investor. Is it correct understanding?
So yes, that is the correct understanding. As I also highlighted in one of the earlier questions, that we are deliberating the tax strategy in light of the budget and basically making internal deliberations on it. So, but to the extent that if old regime continues in these five assets and dividend is declared by the SPVs, then you are absolutely correct that the dividend declared by the InvIT will be tax-free in the hands of the investors.
Thanks. And sir, you insisted in your continuous remark that you are looking for the total return. And the total return is the composition of the distribution as well as capital appreciation. But all our assets are the HAM asset. Then how the capital appreciation can happen? Because there is a no growth. Because in the board project, there is a volume growth as well as the value growth. Because the in the board project, the government, I think the government provides the escalation up to 3% plus 40% of the WPI. In HAM project, there is the annuity rate is the fixed. So how the growth comes and how the capital appreciation can come?
Sir, I have seen degrowth in toll assets, and you know that leads to volatility as well in the toll assets. So while one can say that toll assets provide the potential for upside, it also comes with the potential of downside as well. Are we talking about long concession lives, 15 to 20 years, and you know alternate routes can come about. Anything can happen, right? Government can come out with regimes on toll rates which might not pan out the way we would like to be. I'm not saying that toll projects are not good. I'm just saying that they come with their own set of risks. On HAM projects, how do you create value? If you are able to acquire HAM assets basically either at higher IRRs than what the InvIT is quoting at, or through a combination of higher debt, because when you can scale up the leverage in the InvIT and then acquire the assets at a higher IRR, obviously, basically, when you bring in assets at a much higher IRR than what your InvIT is quoting at, that leads to accretion for the unit holders. So we'll be doing all of that. And as I also mentioned, that we are also looking at toll assets. We're not saying that we are close to it. It needs to make sense on an absolute risk-adjusted return basis for investors. And if we find assets, then we will certainly pursue those opportunities.
Thanks, sir, and all the best, and providing the all answer in the details. Thank you very much. It increased our understanding about the InvIT. Sir, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next question is from the line of Shubhashish Mondal from Zuno General Insurance. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So thank you for this opportunity, sir. I need to understand, as per the SEBI regulation, till the sixth continuous distribution, your leverage cannot be 70%, right? So I can assume till like upcoming 18 or 24 months there will be no leverage headroom. So what will be the? So I can expect there will be no further acquisition till the timeline, right?
No, that's not true. I mean, I mentioned earlier that we will be bringing in the next round of assets basically in the next, you know, 6 to 9 months into the InvIT. So I have kind of given a guidance that, you know, we should be doubling the size of the InvIT by H1 FY27. There are ways to pursue acquisitions. One is that you can, you know, bring in assets through a swap of InvIT units like how you do in the formation transaction. So both Alpha Alternatives and Dilip Buildcon are completely open to that concept. You know, will also lead to, you know, giving investors confidence that the sponsor and a pretty large unit holder are open to kind of, you know, increasing their stake in the InvIT by bringing in and swapping their assets for InvIT units. We also have the ability to raise further capital, because if we are bringing in the right quality assets at the right value, then there are enough investors, you know, who will be, you know, wanting to put capital into the InvIT, you know, to help us make those acquisitions. And then as we go ahead in this journey, you know, we will also be able to increase the leverage on a much larger AUM base, which also will then facilitate growth in the InvIT. So there are multiple levers which are available, and we will use all of those levers as we move ahead in the journey.
Okay, and for the next question on the NAV part, like till the further acquisition, if the repayment is also part of your DPU, we can assume that 120 number is not like it will decrease gradually, right? Till the further acquisition.
I mean, obviously these are fixed life assets. So, I mean, you know, logically speaking, by the time you kind of come to the end of the concession life and no further additions happen, NAV needs to reduce and, you know, ultimately get to zero. You know, what basically matters is that, you know, vis-a-vis the NAV, you know, where the unit units trade at, and you know, working on, you know, the business strategy is to bring the price closer to the NAV, and that's basically what I mentioned earlier in the call, that, you know, we are basically very, very clear in our objectives for the InvIT, and we believe that as we start delivering, you should see basically, you know, the unit price, you know, getting closer to the NAV price.
Okay, thank you from my side.
Thank you very much. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jignesh Shah for closing comments.
Thank you, Nirav, once again. Thank you everyone for the detailed discussions. We really thank you all for, you know, taking this time and for asking the right questions. It's always good, because, you know, that helps the management team as well, the questions coming from the investors. As, you know, we discussed, you know, we just like to kind of, you know, reiterate that we remain firmly committed to achieving our long-term vision of creating a stable yield-generating platform with sustainable growth. We really deeply value your support, your trust, and what I would like to also mention is that we are also committed to, you know, maintaining transparent and timely communication with all of our stakeholders. We will be proactively sharing all the material developments, ensuring that there are no surprises as we move ahead in the journey. You know, as we pursue future acquisitions, you know, we'll be in touch. If there are any follow-on questions which any of you have, the team is available to answer the questions. We will try to be prompt in our responses. From the bottom of my heart and from the team out here, a big thank you to all of you once again. And we are looking forward to our continued engagement and support from all of you in the weeks, months and the years ahead. Thank you. All of you have a good day.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Anantam Highways Trust, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.
Thank you.